All right. So turn to the second page, page 3. The second page of notes, third page in your book. And you'll see at the top there, truth. And this is one of my favorite discussions we're going to have. I just really think this is so foundational to everything else we do within our faith, within the study of apologetics. This is the foundational element to everything else we're going to talk about. And it comes from this idea of epistemology. And it's basically the study of truth, or how you can know things. And so I think it's important, before we go on to talk about what we know and how to defend the truth, we have to figure out what exactly it is and if we can know truth or if we can't. And so to begin with, there are some general views of truth, and there are basically four categories that people think truth is. Okay. For instance, you might have heard somebody say, "Well, you know, I don't believe in homosexuality is right, and that's not true for me. But whatever is true for you." That's a theory of truth, or a kind of a category of truth. And so, what do you think the different categories of truth or approaches to truth people might have? What might they be called? So there's one category, absolute truth. Truth is absolute. That's definitely one of them. You could also call that objective truth. Absolute and objective are somewhat synonymous.
Relative.
Relative truth. That's another one. Relative truth. And we'll get into what these mean in a minute. But what else? What other ideas about truth are out there?
Situational.
That's somewhat relative. There's another one similar to relative, and we'll get into the difference between the two, but people also call truth this sometimes. It's not relative. Subjective truth. Subjective truth. Truth is subjective. And then there's a fourth approach to truth. It's non-existent or absent truth. And so, objective truth, or absolute truth, which was first brought up, is basically truth that is independent of any individual or consensus. It's independent of an individual or a consensus of people. Absent truth is simply, there is no truth. It's non-existent. There's no such thing as truth. And then we have subjective and relative truth. And what do you think the difference would be between these two? Because they sound synonymous, but they're not.
Well, relative truth would be truth that's relevant to the moment, or relevant to whatever situation you're in.
Okay. How is that different than subjective?
Subjective is how each person looks at it through their own.
Okay, the key, the distinction that's being made here is that subjective truth is dependent upon individual. They get to determine the truth. Relative truth is determined by a group of people or a culture. Okay, so you might have sometimes hear a discussion about the Holocaust. And you would say, well, do you think that's wrong in talking with somebody? Do you think that's morally wrong? And they would say, well, we do in the United States, but we can't tell Nazi Germany, we're not in a position to tell them what's right and wrong for them. They have to determine as a society what's right for them and wrong for them. So them as a people group, I can't tell them they're wrong. We know it's wrong in our group of people. We look at some ancient cultures that way, like some tribes in Africa, child sacrifice, and people go, well, we think that's wrong, but we can't tell them that in their society or their tribe of people that they've determined that to be wrong or right as well. We can't tell them they're wrong because they've determined for their own society what right or wrong is. So that would be relative truth. That idea of homosexuality, where someone says, well, I think it's wrong, but I can't tell someone else that they're wrong. That's subjective truth. It's talking about individual people versus cultures. Do you guys have any experiences with the difference between those? Anyone ever engaged a conversation with somebody that believes in relative truth? Or a group of people you want to share?
Oh, I'm just generally speaking that like you were saying, for cultures, certain cultures believe different things. And what we feel is right, wrong, they feel, you know, entirely different.
Mm-hmm. I would say, too, it happens within the United States. With Christians, they say abortion is wrong. Well, there are some people out there that say, well, you know, I think it's wrong. I wouldn't personally choose it, and we as Christians wouldn't choose it, but we can't tell them, non-Christians, that they're wrong. That's just what they've determined to be true. And so that Christian who says that, they're not only appealing to relative truth, but also subjective truth. They're saying they can't tell an individual that they're wrong. Everyone's allowed to have their own opinion, and every culture is allowed to determine what's right and wrong for them. Any other examples of this?
A discussion once with an attorney, and he would prosecute child abuse. And I said, well, yeah, but then how can you not prosecute abortion? And he'd say, well, that's up to them.
Yeah. I was talking with Mark Birdseye yesterday, and he either just went to a conference or is getting ready to go to a conference for YMCA at large. There's this big movement to kind of go back to their roots. And YMCA was founded in Great Britain. A guy started Bible studies for young men that were getting mixed up in the wrong stuff. And so as they've progressed as an organization, they've kind of veered from that. And so there's this push to recognize wellness. And so they want to recognize wellness in the whole of your life. And it's interesting because as he's in conversation with people and they talk about what needs to be done to return us back to this, there are discussions about how to define wellness. And they're all supposed to write an essay on how they would define wellness. And no one essay trumps the other. So now he's going to show up at a conference where possibly thousands of different definitions of wellness, different definitions of obesity, different definitions of health, spirituality, all of these are supposed to be calculated as the same. So this is an appeal to subjective truth, that we all, each individually, get to choose what is right and wrong and how to define even terms, which is interesting because even language today falls into the category primarily of subjective truth. It's like dictionaries are simply recommendations. We recommend you define this word this way, but if that's not what you want it to mean, you don't have to. You don't have to take that meaning. Yeah. And you see that in courts of law many times. Semantics, they say, well, that's not what I meant. A recent president was under trial and said some terminology that was, apparently he has a different definition for it than we do. So it's interesting how this plays out in society, but I think it's very important to recognize when you're in a conversation with somebody, if you can determine what their approach to truth is. And what we're going to go through are some tools to help not only identify that, but also combat that. Because we as Christians, what do we appeal to?
Absolute,
objective truth. And where do we get this idea from? What part of the Bible? All of it? Give me a specific passage where God says there's John 14:6, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. He didn't say I'm a way, and I'm a truth, and I'm a life. He says the way, the truth. He's appealing to absolute objective truth and reality. Okay? So how do I know objective truth exists at all? Statements by nature contain subjective matter. They are about something. Otherwise, we refer to them as incoherent. There are four basic types of statements. You guys, any English teachers in here? The four basic types of statements that exist in the English language? Declarative.
Imperative.
Interrogative. I was going to go for something a little less English. I was going to say questions. Commands, opinions, and propositions. Well, when you put it that way, huh? So questions, commands, opinions, and propositions. So which of those statements possess truth value?
Commands.
Does a command possess truth value? Go, clean your room. Does that possess truth value? Will you clean your room?
No.
I think your room is dirty. Your room is dirty. Which of those possesses truth value? Go, clean your room. Will you clean your room? I think your room is dirty. Your room is dirty. Propositions. Propositions possess truth value. Okay, they're either right or they're wrong. True or false. An opinion doesn't have to be true or false. It's an opinion. A question may contain truth value, but it's not solely riding on that. A command is simply a command. It doesn't hold truth value. The truth is, if you don't follow it, in some cases, there are negative repercussions, right? But the only one that holds truth value is a proposition. And so my challenge to you is throughout this week, when you're in conversations with people on the job site or at work or at home, listen for propositions, because they happen a lot more than we think. People are claiming truth in their everyday life. Most people that appeal to subjective truth, relative truth, really live according to absolute truth. They make propositional statements all the time that determine things in their life. So to possess truth value, it is to be either true or false. Okay, and propositions are the only ones that have that potential. Okay, so some propositions refer to themselves. Example, this sentence contains 5 words. It's a proposition. It's either true or it's false. The statement either contains 5 words, 4 words, 6 words, but it's true or it's false. Some propositions which refer to themselves fail to uphold what they are about. They either falsify themselves or make the statement irrational. It's not possible for them to be true. These are known as self-refuting statements. Raise your hand if you've heard of a self-refuting statement. Anyone heard of that idea? Something that's self-refuting? Self-falsifying? What's that?
There is no truth.
There is no truth.
That's self-refuting. Destroy your argument.
Okay. Do you guys see that? Ed shared the example that there is no truth. In order for that statement to be true, it has to be false. And if it's false, then it can't be true. Self-refuting. Some other examples. I do not exist. I know nothing. There is no truth, like Ed said. All propositions are false. You guys are you seeing the self-refuting nature in these? I do not exist. I know nothing. If I know nothing, then I don't know that I know nothing. If all propositions are false, then even that proposition that all propositions are false is false. Therefore, it's true. Oh, I get so mixed up. It's early. You need a little stronger coffee next time. I see you. Another example, all bachelors are married males. My son is pregnant. A triangle has 6 sides. Everything I say is a lie. These propositions are self-refuting. For those of you in the listening audience, Mike made a very poignant remark that it was asked who would say these type of statements, and he simply replied, those running for office. I want everyone else to enjoy the humor that exists here. In reality, you hear them a lot more than you think. We just give people passes. We don't hold them to the fire on these things. Because people say there is no truth all the time. But that's a leading statement. In order for that statement to be true, it's false at its immediacy. So people do say these type of things. Obviously, they don't say a triangle has 6 sides unless they're like in kindergarten and they don't know what a triangle is yet, right? But the point is, these are tools that show the absurdity of the view that truth is not absolute. Does that make sense? This is a tool to simply share and go over these examples of absolute self-refuting statements, it helps establish that there must be some sort of absolute in order for even these statements to be wrong, right? And so they're very effective in determining that, especially the "there is no truth" one is a very popular one used, at least on college campuses, when there's this discussion in philosophy classes about the nature of truth. That one statement is pretty hard to refute, because people say, well, it's subjective. So is it my opinion that there is no truth? But when I say the statement, "there is no truth," it's either right or it's wrong. Okay. So self-refuting statements reveal first principles, their opposite, or what is known as common sense, ideas for which no further evidence is necessary. Some examples of these, the opposite of self-refuting statements, which are known as self-evident statements: "I exist." And that was the big thing for René Descartes, the French philosopher. He wrote his essays on life called Reflections, and basically he was questioning his own existence. And he determined to set out on this task of finding out what truth and reality really was. And so what he thought he had to do was negate and falsify all the assumptions that he had grown up with, and depart with all reason that he had been trained and taught with. And so he said, okay, I'm going to start at the basics. I do not exist. And so then he realized that in order for me to say that, I have to exist for me even to ask the question. And so it was, anyway, but he spent a long time, I guess, writing about this. So, and as a philosophy major, you're required to read it. So I don't know. Another one, "I know something." That's a self-fulfilling statement. "There is truth." How is that self-fulfilling or self-evident? Because it's the opposite of "there is no truth," with this, which is self-refuting. So how is "I know there is truth," how is that self-evident? No more evidence needed. Okay, that was just an interesting question to see how you guys would answer. No, you're good. The other one, "some propositions are true." Some propositions are true. These statements are undeniable, can't even be denied unless they are true, and are therefore self-evident. No other conclusion is possible. Recognizing that the opposite cannot be true at the same time reveals the concept of the law of non-contradiction, that two contradictory propositions can't both be true at the same time. Okay? Has anyone ever heard of the law of non-contradiction? Any math teachers out there? Okay. It can't both be true at the same time that 2 plus 2 equals 4 and 2 plus 2 does not equal 4. Those are self-refuting, self-contradictory, mutually contradictory propositions. They can't both be true at the same time. The statement "there is no God" and "there is a God" are mutually contradictory propositions. They can't both be true at the same time. To say that it is raining in one specific spatial location at one time and to say that it is not raining there can't both be true at the same time. Now, you could say it's raining in Grand County and it's not raining in Grand County, and that would be true, because Grand County is so large. But if we're talking about a specific spatial location, those are mutually contradictory propositions. To say "I exist" and "I don't exist" are mutually contradictory propositions. There is truth and there is no truth, mutually contradictory propositions. They can't both be true at the same time and in the same place. This is huge, so circle that or something, because if you're ever in a discussion with somebody and you're talking about the nature of truth, the law of non-contradiction is your friend, okay? Because at some point you're going to be able to draw out mutually contradictory propositions within someone's own argumentation, and that's huge. And third, knowledge is therefore founded upon self-evident principles, and through such fundamental truths we understand the objective and nature of truth. In order to establish a theory or definition of truth, we must distinguish between subjective and objective truth. So something determined by an individual or something that exists outside of and not connected to an individual. Subjective, that which exists dependently upon an individual. So truth that depends upon somebody's opinion or experience. Some examples would be Hoosiers is the greatest movie ever made. That's subjective truth. Washington is the greatest place to live. Blue is the best color. So, any other examples of subjective truth? Remember, propositions, statements. Pete, you got one right off the top of your head.
I'm very smart.
You're very smart. Okay, that's subjective, right? There are people that may disagree with you. What else? Use that in a sentence.
I think humanism is very subjective.
Okay, how so?
We can't tell what is true, what we believe is true, but they may
Okay. Right, group or individual, I think. Yeah, a humanist or humanists. I think that works for both. Any other examples of subjective truth statements? Broncos are the best. Okay, you guys are getting it. Objective, therefore, that which exists independently or regardless of any individual or even group of people, such as 2 plus 2 equals 4, is not dependent on somebody believing it. It is. Gravity. Just is. Photosynthesis. It's not dependent upon whether people or not. It happens regardless of their opinion or their conclusions about it. These things are objective. And something to note there, sincerity of belief and individual preference have no bearing upon such matters. Sincerity. However sincerely you disagree with gravitational law, when you climb up on the top of a building or you're on a ladder, whether you agree with it or not, and your sincerity of belief is not dependent upon how true it is, you will fall. You will hurt yourself. No matter how sincerely I believe I could run through this wall, my sincerity has nothing to do with the actual state of affairs. And I'm going to be sincerely wrong and mistaken. Yes?
That brings to my mind when Jesus said,
is he talking about faith or belief? Faith is small as a mustard seed.
Right.
Okay. So do faith and truth have any relationship? If I have faith that I can run through this wall, or is that hope? Do I hope I can run through wall? Faith doesn't determine truth?
Right. It's the object of our faith that we need to know if it's true or not.
It's the object of our... of what?
The object of our faith is what we need to know, whether it's true.
The object of our faith, okay. What did you say, Jeff? He's wrong.
I think faith requires truth.
Okay. We talked about this a little bit in the other. Okay. When you look at Hebrews chapter 11, right, what does it say there? Faith is now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. So is there truth wrapped up in faith? Conviction is defined as strong belief based upon satisfactory evidence. Conviction. Strong belief based on satisfactory evidence. Seems like there are some truth involved in faith, but I don't think that they're the same thing, because there are some people that don't have faith in things that are true. Right? your faith. Okay, so it's true that faith can be wrong. Faith can be in something that is false. That happens all the time. You think of the Branch Davidian compound outside of Waco, Texas. They had a sincere faith that David Koresh was the Messiah, that he was Jesus Christ returned. And they were sincerely wrong, right? Truth is not based on sincerity or faithfulness to a conviction, right? It's objective. It's not dependent upon an individual.
So Abraham and Sarah had a sincere belief they could not have a child when she was 90 and he was 100, but they did. They did not have faith. And what they said mentally would be true, but yet God could override them.
Right. So we can be sincerely wrong. When we place our faith in things, it could be wrong. A lot of times it is. Because we're calculating things based upon our own experience and standard. They had, yeah, anti-faith. They were unfaithful. It's a belief. Now we're getting into a discussion, what's the difference between faith and belief. Do you guys remember our discussion from last apologetics? Not last class, but the last session. It's an interesting one. What's the relationship between belief and faith? We might have to save that for another day. Okay, we'll go on another day because we need to get through some stuff here. So, all right, if truth is absolute, what defines or determines truth? And I'm going to share with you the three primary theories of truth. Okay, and these are things that you probably have not heard, and there's no reason you should have. And you're not going to go around categorizing people within these theories and say, oh, you must adhere to the correspondence theory of truth. That's interesting. Like they're going to go, what are you talking about? But it helps us have some framework and some terminology to go with here. The first one is the coherence theory. And a proposition is true if it coheres with one's entire system of beliefs. Okay? A proposition is true if, fill in the blank, it coheres with one's entire system of beliefs. If it coheres with one's entire system of beliefs. So can you think of some examples of the coherence theory of truth? Mormonism? Okay.
God is in control.
God is in control. And that's from what system of beliefs?
Christianity,
Mormonism, Islam, Judaism. Okay. So it's not necessarily a bad theory, because there's a lot of things that we would claims that and propositions we have within Christianity that would apply to this. Okay, it's coherent within our entire system of beliefs. The second one is the pragmatic theory. A proposition is true if it is expedient in that it brings about the desired results or provides a good basis for action. So I'll read that again. A proposition is true within the pragmatic theory of truth if it is expedient in that it brings about the desired results or provides a good basis for action. If it is expedient, it brings about desired results or provides a good basis for action. What realm of our culture do you think that this theory of truth finds a great home in?
If it feels good, do it.
New Age? What specific part of our American way of life? Government. Politics. Media. Right? If it's expedient and it brings about the desired result, then we can rationalize this proposition is true because it the mean justify. What's expedient mean?
Get you there quickly.
Okay, it's a fast track to what you need or want. Okay. If something is expedient, it's very quick, and it brings about a quick desired result. Does it make sense? So it may not be the best way, but it's the fastest way. That would be expedient. Okay. What did you say?
Microwave.
A microwave is expedient. Okay. What are some other examples of the expedient theory of truth, or the pragmatic theory of truth?
I like a lot of religions.
A lot of religions? Yeah.
If achieving eternal life is the goal, you can have different paths, different religions to reach that goal.
If eternal life or heaven, eternal happiness is the goal, then there are a lot of ways to get there. And whatever works best for you, oftentimes, is the most expedient way to do that. It's true. It would seem as though Christianity is one of the least expedient. That in Islam, I would say, and Judaism. Because there's a lot of attention given to things that are contrary to our natural inclination. There are rules and things that get in the way of our sinful nature. Mm-hmm. But then also, Christianity is the most expedient.
Right. That's what I would think. Me too.
So, but those outside of it would look at it and say, it's just a bunch of rules. A lot of can't do this, don't do this. 8 of the 10 commandments are negative. Don't, thou shall not. Man, it seems like a lot of restrictions. So it doesn't seem as expedient. But then again, the blood of Christ is the most expedient way to heaven. So, okay. So maybe it seems as though the ultimate theory of truth, or the ultimate truth, is the best in all of these areas. Interesting to think about. So then the third one, correspondence theory of truth. A proposition is true if there is fact or reality to which it accurately corresponds. There is fact or reality to which it accurately corresponds. 2 + 2 = 4. There is fact and reality to which that corresponds. It may not be the most pragmatic. It may not be the most, it doesn't have to fit into a system, an entire system of beliefs. It's just true, and it corresponds to reality. Okay, so why does it matter? Religious beliefs are often thought of as merely a personal matter, something that I've encountered a lot in discussions, that it's a personal thing and you can't tell someone they're wrong, that you can't provide evidence because... And that was actually something that when I first arrived at college, I sat down with a guy and he basically started asking me why I believed what I believed. And I didn't have any of the right answers as far as philosophically. But I came back to my testimony, my experience. You can't take that away from me. And I think that's even true in a lot of ways, that people think that's a sacred thing you can't touch. But wouldn't we like to disprove a lot of other religions' personal experiences and say that was probably something else? Either hallucinated that or... But you can't touch ours. We love to disprove other people's personal experiences in other religions. My favorite one to disprove is Joseph Smith's. He's the founder of Mormonism. His personal experience, and that's one of the things that Mormons really hit on, is, you know, he was alone in this field, and God the Father and God the Son, two distinctly individual deities, appeared to him, and he was face to face with them. And so I asked them, well, do you believe the Book of Mormon, the Bible, or... They're equal. They're not contradictory. And they say, yeah, of course. And then I asked them about when Moses requested to see God's glory. And God said, no man can see my face and live. So God had to take Moses, put him behind the cleft of the rock, and had to pass by, and Moses could see the very last glimpse of his passing by. He wasn't allowed to see his face, but Joseph Smith claims he saw Jesus the Son and God the Father, the two deities, face to face. If that's not contradictory, I don't know what is. But they say, well, that was his personal experience, and you can't attack that. Well, I just did. There was a in Liberty, Missouri, there's like a temple there just outside of William Jewell College, and it's a Mormon temple, and it's a sacred site because that was where Joseph Smith was imprisoned for 4 months as he was being transported across the country. And so, and that's where he got, I think, a greater majority of his visions for the Book of Mormon, and was translated most of it in that jail cell. And that's where I first encountered two missionaries that were leading us on a tour. We took basically the entire Worldview Academy camp, all the kids, after we had trained them for the first half of the week, we went to this place and we said, all right, sick 'em. It was great fun. And it was interesting because after all of these, I mean, I think we had 150 high school students go in there and asking questions in a respectful way, because we were very adamant that you will accomplish nothing if you're a jerk about it. And so they were simply just asking questions kind of in the Columbo method, just kind of going, well, this doesn't make sense, you know, kind of thing. And little kids, they're innocent, right? So you think, oh, that's cute. So we get done, and someone had forgot their jacket, so they kind of took us through this tour, and we ended up in the gift shop or whatever, and then everyone left. And so I went back in to get someone's jacket, and these two missionary girls were in there, and they were like, this is what they told us about. We were just persecuted for our faith, and this is what they promised would happen to us. And I was like, oh, brother. So anyway, so they found a way to rationalize the truth that they were persecuted because it cohered with their entire system of beliefs. They were told they'd be persecuted, so when people doubt them, that's persecution, and it fulfills the truth of their belief system. Isn't that crazy? Okay. And I would say that, and I'm going to go out on a limb here, but I would say sometimes Christians do that too. A lot. With miracles, I think sometimes we Christians want miracles to happen so bad that we call things miracles that aren't miracles. Because a miracle definition is something that happens that's supernatural, outside of the natural order of things. And a lot of times something happens in our favor and we go, that was a miracle, when that was very natural for something like that to happen. Right? So, anyway, and we do that to bolster our faith, and it may be false claims. Anyway, so religious beliefs are often thought of as merely a personal matter. The coherence theory allows contradictory beliefs to both be true. So things can be contradictory because they are private to that system of beliefs. So in one system, God may exist, and in another system of beliefs, he may not exist. But since they're in two closed systems of beliefs, they can mutually exist. And those propositions can be mutually contradictory because truth just depends on the system that you're in. I talked to a guy at Oregon State one time, and he said, and we're going to get into relativism and talk about pluralism within religions, and he basically said, no matter what religion you pick, he said, I think they can all be true. Only the people that are saved are those that are faithful to that belief system. So if you choose Christianity, which it sounds like you have, as he said to me, as long as you're faithful to the tenets and the guidelines within that religious system, you'll probably go to heaven. But then also, you are a Muslim and you adhere to that system and you're faithful to that system and you're a good Muslim, then you too will go to heaven. If you're a Buddhist and you're faithful to that system, if you're an atheist and you're faithful to that system, then you too will receive whatever that system promises you will receive. And so they're all true, all mutually contradictory propositions. And so that's the coherence theory of truth, and that it coheres within a system of belief, and that's what truth is. The pragmatic theory allows for more to be true since they may achieve the desired end. Okay, so if you have different desires and different beliefs and mutually contradictory beliefs achieve that end most practically and pragmatically, then they can both be true at the same time within that theory. Now, the correspondence theory of truth does not allow for contradictory propositions to both be true at the same time because they're not dependent upon systems. They're not dependent upon the most pragmatic They're dependent upon reality, and they're backed by the actual state of affairs. They're not dependent upon human experience. So we're going to unpack these three theories a little bit more so we can have a better understanding, and we'll have some questions. Evaluating the theories. The coherence theory understands truth as a matter of beliefs, internal relations with one's other beliefs, not its external relations with reality. Some problems that exist for the coherence. First one, the necessary internal relationship is adequate coherence with one's overall set of beliefs. And when that condition is met, a belief is true necessarily. The necessary internal relationship is adequate coherence. Okay, so if it adequately fits in the system, then it's necessarily true. So for instance, Mormonism, it adequately fits in the system that John Smith saw God the Father and God the Son face to face. And since it fits in that system of beliefs, it's necessarily true because it coheres within that system. And it's just adequate coherence. Does that make sense? What is required to fulfill the condition of coherence? Does logical consistency suffice? So a question to kind of unpack this. What if Joe believes he is a tornado? That tornadoes are conscious, they are dangerous, everyone else is confused about this. Anyone who tells him otherwise is lying, and everyone should avoid him for their own safety. Well, according to his theory, okay, he's logically consistent. There was we talked about this in psychology one time. This guy thought he was a glass of orange juice. He had an LSD trip from back in his past, and so he was stuck in this mindset that he was a glass of no-pulp orange juice. And he sat in his cell. He just sat there. He would never lie down because he was afraid he would spill. He would never eat. He would never drink anything because glasses of orange juice don't do that. And so within his system of beliefs in his own mind, it was logically consistent. He didn't veer from the consistency of his belief. And so within the coherence theory of truth, it would be true that he is a glass of orange juice because he was consistent and it adequately fit in his system of beliefs. Are you starting to see the absurdity? I don't know about that. Okay, is that starting to materialize the problems and the shortcomings of the coherence theory of truth? According to the coherence theory, contradictory beliefs could both be true at the same time if held by different people. So it was both true in the coherence theory of truth that the doctor is observing this glass of orange juice. They saw it as a man and that he wasn't a glass of orange juice. That was true because in their system of beliefs, that was coherent and logically consistent. And in his system of beliefs, he was a glass of orange juice. They can't both be right in a correspondence theory of truth, but in a coherence theory, they can because they're held by two people that have two different systems. Make sense? Somewhat? Okay. I'll let you go and chew on that one. It seems that if propositions are logically inconsistent, then at least one is false, but consistency itself does not guarantee truth, making it necessary but not sufficient. Do you guys understand the distinction between necessary but not sufficient? What is needed for humans to survive? Water, air, food, heat, shelter. What's that? Donuts. That's a coherent theory of truth for you. Are all of these necessary for survival? Yes, right? If you just have one, is that sufficient for survival?
No.
So all are necessary, none are sufficient. Okay? All are necessary, but none are sufficient. So it seems that if propositions are logically inconsistent, then at least one is false, but consistency itself. So it's talking about consistency is necessary for something to be true, but it alone is not sufficient. Truth will be consistent, but that alone is not the only requirement that will make something true, because we've just talked about things that when people are consistent, they are consistently wrong. Okay? So it's talking about that the consistency is necessary but not sufficient. So let's look at the pragmatic theory. understands truth as that which is expedient and is determined by the results of a proposition or idea. Some problems. Number one, the meaning of expedient. Okay? Suitable for achieving a particular end in a given circumstance. Serving to promote one's own interest. Pertaining to utility, interest, or advantage rather than principle. Okay, so whatever's most useful or gives or serves my interest or gives me an advantage rather than based on principle. The criteria of results corresponding to the individual's agenda is a problem. The truth of being overdrawn, having a cavity, or losing a game is contrary to an individual's interest or agenda. Okay? One of the students in church here recently broke his ankle. And he's a soccer player. It's not in his interest or helping to his agenda that he broke his ankle. So according to the pragmatic theory of truth, it to be true that he broke his ankle wouldn't be consistent within his theory because it doesn't serve his interest. It doesn't bring about a desired end. Destin having a torn ligaments in his collarbone doesn't, I mean, has that served you best this week? That hasn't helped you out in the best. Your life is not at its peak right now in your serving your own interests because you have a broken collarbone. So that's interesting. That doesn't line up with the pragmatic theory of truth because it's not expedient for you to have that happen. So therefore, in that theory of truth, you wouldn't have a broken collarbone right now, but you do. People that bald prematurely. A buddy of mine, Bill Jack, he doesn't like the fact that he doesn't have any hair on his head. It's not expedient. It doesn't serve his interest. It's not according to his agenda. Yet it's true that he does not have hair on his head. Okay.
So somebody who refuses to admit the truth of the situation, like a person whose family is falling apart and is refusing to see this, is on the, I forget what we're talking about.
Pragmatic, yeah, expedient. It's not expedient, right? Right. And sometimes I think that because of pride, things that come up that don't serve the best interest and aren't expedient, that interrupt maybe a proposition or a decision, out of pride you have to narrowly somehow work that into the equation that that's helpful for you or what your desired end is. I think that happens in politics a lot. They make a decision that they need to do this and this is the right true thing to do, based on the end in mind, and that's the quickest way to get to that end. But then things come up in the intermediary that kind of throw that off, and then they have to then say, that's right and good, this is right and good, and they have to add these things in there just to stay consistent with the original reason why going to this end.
And that's why it looks contradictory.
Mm-hmm. Frequently it does, yeah. Okay. That's a good point. So we'll continue on. The same person can hold contradictory beliefs that are both true. This is a key difference from the coherence theory. The same person can hold two mutually contradictory propositions. The coherence theory meant two different people because they have two different systems can hold a mutually contradictory proposition. But this pragmatic theory means one person could hold two mutually contradictory propositions because they both serve to meet an end. Okay? And this is where you get hypocrisy. For instance, when I was first in high school, and if you read my testimony, I was a coat Christian. I would put Christianity on when it served my purpose. So when I was with my Christian friends, it was pragmatic and expedient in order for me to be accepted and popular amongst my Christian friends to be Christian. But then also when I was around non-Christian friends, it was popular and expedient for me not to let out this fact that I was a Christian and just kind of go along with that system of beliefs. And so I was mutually contradictory in that in one aspect I believed God existed, and in another aspect it was whatever served my purpose best. Okay?
Isn't Ed Jackson's statement, donuts are necessary for survival, an example of that? Contradictory beliefs that are both true if expedience is the test?
She's calling you incoherent, Ed. Wouldn't be the first time, huh?
Goes with age.
Goes with age. Well, how do you think that fits?
Well,
unpack that for us.
A pragmatist can say, I need that donut because it's the quick way to solve
their tummy.
Hunger.
Yeah.
But they probably also would adhere to the fact that
trans fatty acids?
Trans fatty acids are bad for them.
Right.
So if pragmatism is the, if we determine truth based upon whether it's expedient or not, we have a problem there because we're saying that donut was good for him because it was expedient, but we're also saying fatty acids are bad.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not coherent.
Mm-hmm. And I think we see kids operate on this theory of truth the most, in that whatever appetite is prevalent, they go for that desired result. Now, I don't think that they would say it's true, but they just think that's the most right thing I can do right now is feed whatever appetite I have without thinking about the consequences of that. So, anyway. Okay. Lies often work according to the interest or agenda of an individual, but this does not make them true. Imagine a defendant on trial. The expedient is whatever clears him of the charge. So if lies work, then lies are true. So when they swear on the Bible, or swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, and the pragmatic theory of truth, whatever gets me off the hook is true and good, because that meets my interest and my agenda at this time. I was recently, I don't even know, I think I can talk about it because it's over, was at jury duty last week. And so I was in the box. I was one of the 12 being kind of questioned and interviewed. And it was a case where a gentleman had, he was charged with a DUI and not signaling and turning through a red light to the left or something like that. And basically, as we were being questioned, you could kind of figure out what the defense's case was, because they were asking questions as to whether or not we thought breathalyzers were the end-all in determining whether someone was drunk. And if breathalyzer hadn't been used and the officer had still charged this gentleman with a DUI. And so the defense was trying to say, well, the fact that maybe the guy was drunk is irrelevant. The police officer didn't use a breathalyzer, scientific evidence, to determine that. And so it was kind of this pragmatic, it's pragmatic that a breathalyzer, because I'm sure if the guy had gotten a breathalyzer, the defense would have been saying, look, that's not the only way to determine whether or not someone's drunk. I mean, the case would have been flipped on its head. So it's definitely a pragmatic theory. Okay, so in conclusion, the results have little to do with the truth. The proposition must match reality. And that brings us to the correspondence theory of truth. Correspondence or non-correspondence constitutes the relationship between a proposition and the actual state of affairs. Okay, so does it correspond to reality, to the actual state of affairs? On this view, truth is not dependent on culture, perspective, or preference. Again, that goes back to 2 plus 2 equals 4. It doesn't care whether what culture you're from, whether you want it to be true or not. Same with gravity. Whether you're in Australia, whether you're in Japan, whether you're in the United States, it doesn't matter. It's gravity. It doesn't matter what culture or what you want to be true. If correspondence is not required for truth, then lies are impossible and factual communication breaks down. There would be no way to identify a lie. If one's statements need not correspond to the fact in order to be true, then any factually incorrect statement could be true. If your statements don't have to match reality, then you can say anything and it's not a lie, because they don't have to match reality. But if they do, then we have a way now to determine truth from lie. It would be unclear how we would determine that any statement is actually false. So when we ask the question, is truth pragmatic or is truth coherent, we see that in order for either to be true, they must correspond to reality, not work for me or fit with the other things I believe. A helpful question is, what makes a map true? It corresponds to the actual topography of the land. If a map is false, okay, you're lost. So it's not pragmatic. It doesn't cohere within a system, and it doesn't match reality. Okay. In order to be true, it must correspond to the facts. Does this make sense? So if something is true, it will correspond. It will be practical. and it will be coherent. But coherence and practicality or expediency are not sufficient. They're necessary, but they're not sufficient in and of themselves. Okay? So like we said, Christianity is the most coherent, the most pragmatic, and also the most correspondent. All right. It meets the best in all three categories, yes. Okay. And so we'll be talking about that a little bit more. Any questions about this? A lot of this, again, like I said, I'm gonna shoot, and some of this stuff may go over your head, but it's you're gonna catch some stuff along the way. Okay? And it's gonna be challenging. And I encourage you to go back home and read this stuff, and if next week you go, okay, I just let that pass by in class because there were a lot of people, but I really got to ask Chad a question about this. We can either talk next week or you can email me, and I'll give you that email address. That's cwarren@wpcc4him.org. So if there is a question that comes up, and like I said, this is good. I want you to chew on this stuff. Truth will meet all three of these. Truth will meet all theories. But you have to ask yourself, if something is rationalized as true, a proposition is made, and you think, okay, that may cohere, that may be pragmatic, but it doesn't correspond to reality, then it's not true. If it doesn't correspond to the actual state of affairs, it has to have all three. Or it will have all three, yeah. Because truth may not be the most expedient thing depending on what you want. It may not be, depending on what your desired end is. If that makes sense.
I would think the meaning of the word expedient would really have to be stretched in order for some truth to meet the pragmatic test.
Right. Yeah. And again, it depends on what your end is, what you want to have happen. What you want to be true.
So truth will meet all three, but it doesn't necessarily mean that truth is all three.
Right.
Okay. Is there something in the definition of truth that would require that it not change throughout time?
Something in the definition of truth. Right.
True at that time. No, that's not true. I mean, is there an additional quality?
I don't think so, because something that was true in the 50s may not be true today, like you said. It has to correspond with the actual state of affairs. So something that was true of the continent when Pangaea existed is not true today, as far as maybe the coastlines and stuff like that, because it doesn't match with reality today. Right.
Is there an additional element of truth that would say this is something that is true always?
I think it depends on the proposition. Depends on the truth that you're talking about. It depends on how you're talking about truth, because truth can be an adjective and it can also be a noun. God is truth. Hebrews says Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. So he's unchanging. But something that is true means that's an aspect of that thing, that it meets truth. It's real. It's actual. Does that make sense? So it depends on how you're talking about truth, I think. So a certain coastline, like the length of the western coast of the continent during Pangaea, was true then. That was in the actual state of affairs. But a map of Pangaea would not be true today. Yeah, I mean, you could define it as eternal truth. I think it depends on the subject in which it's applied to. Like, I mean, I think there are some truths that are unchanging and some truths that are changing. For instance, yeah, like maps of Russia. I mean, they have different names and they have different borders because Europe is constantly changing. Political map, yeah.
You say she is pregnant. That is true.
And then it changes. Right. But the idea that it's true because it matches the actual state of affairs is unchanging. The fact that it's true because it matches the actual state of affairs, truth has to match the actual state of affairs. So the fact that God's word is eternal, or there are such thing as eternal truths, because they will always match the actual state of affairs. But there are some truths that change simply because the actual state of affairs change.
So how about the world is flat? It never was flat. People really believe it was flat.
It was never true.
But they were thinking
it. Right. But it didn't, even then, it didn't match the actual state of affairs. They were wrong. So it wasn't true, no matter how hard they thought it was.
But they didn't know.
Right. But it was still untrue. Right. Yeah. That goes back to the whole quantum mechanics stuff. Did I ever tell you guys about that story? I was all riding on the chairlift, and there was these two, this guy and this girl that were from Scotland, and they were both getting their PhD in physics. And so I got into this discussion about absolute truth, and this guy brings up the cat in the black box. Have you ever heard of that whole, what was it actually? Right, where there's a cat in a box with radioactive material, and whether the cat is both alive and dead, because you can't know whether either is true. But there is an actual state of affairs. It's either dead or alive. It's not half dead. Like, have you seen The Princess Bride? Mm-hmm. He says, your friend is not all the way dead, he's mostly dead. There's a difference. And then he takes the fire starter and puts it in his mouth or whatever. But it wouldn't match there's a probability. But it wouldn't match the actual state of affairs. Well, they say if you stand here long enough, you could just, the molecules would separate and you could push your hand. That's a theory, though. Anyway. Well, the reality is it doesn't match the actual state of affairs that I could live long enough, so it's untrue that I could push my hand through there. Because I, as a human, can't live that long. So it doesn't match the actual state of affairs. Therefore, it doesn't correspond to reality. Any other questions? Wasn't this fun?
Yeah.
Some of you are going, oh, man, I got to go take a nap. That's okay. It's early. All righty. Well, thank you, guys.